imaging of the area, looking at the groin for hernias and looking at the testicle for any sign of inflammation, infection, or tumors. Usually, if there's bothersome pain in the scrotal area, like persistent or significantly frequent pain, there's treatments available for that.
Are you in the process of creating something huge and you want to understand how others have done it? Or have you already found success and still feel something is missing? Then this podcast is for you. Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge, a podcast where Alex Atwood chats with top performers to discover habits, routines, and alchemy that you can put to work in your own life.
Today, I am so excited to be talking to an expert in men's sexual health, Dr. Mark Richman. So after getting burned out with a surgical practice, he co-founded a concierge practice called Obsidian. It's based in the Washington, D.C. area. He's treated clients throughout the world. He's worked with global leaders, celebrities, and more. And I'm really excited to talk to him today, not just about his practice, but I actually went and talked to some of the guys here on the staff and some friends and colleagues about some things, some questions that maybe they have that they may not be so open to share. So hopefully we can get some of those questions answered from Dr. Mark today. And let's just get started. So it's great to see you, Dr. Mark. Thank you for joining the show.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's go back. Tell me about, where did you grow up? What did you want to be when you were a kid? Did you always think you'd want to be a medical doctor, or was there some other dream that you had?
Yeah, I'm from New York, originally from the big city, but then we moved upstate to the West Point area. I went to high school in that region of the state, and I always had an interest in medicine. You know, science and math kind of came easy to me, so maybe I just kind of took the easy way out. But I went to a small college in Connecticut called Wesleyan University, and I double majored there in molecular biology and chemistry. And then I was pretty certain I wanted to go to med school, so applied, got into several, decided to go to a state school in New York to save some money. So I went up to Buffalo, New York for 4 years, got my medical degree there at the Jacobs School of Medicine, froze my ass off for 4 years, but, it was worth it. Got tired of the cold, after that experience, and, you know, went down to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, for my surgical and urology residency. So I spent 6 years there learning how to be a urologist and a urologic surgeon, and I loved it down there, and never really looked back. I love medicine. I've always enjoyed it, and it kind of came a little bit easy to me, so maybe I took the easy way out instead of like going to law school or something, or trying to be a businessman or something like that.
Well, I wouldn't say it's the easy way out. I wouldn't say medical school can be necessarily thought of as easy. But I know you went into a surgical practice. You were in a hospital-based surgical practice as a urologist, right?
Yes.
And then at some point, you decided to go at it on your own, become an entrepreneur, and to focus on men's sexual health. Was there something that happened? Was there a moment where you wanted to help men, or was there a moment where you wanted, was it something in yourself that wanted you to take this path?
That a lot of my colleagues in urology and endocrinology and internal medicine weren't really interested in taking care of men's health issues. And I was just getting all these patients sent to me from other urologists, you know, for like low testosterone and for ED. And I'm like, you know, why aren't they treating it? You know, they're urologists. But not all of them really had as much training as I did in that field, thanks to Dr. Carson. And not all of them are very interested in that. So a series of those events kind of led me to say, you know what, maybe it's time to switch gears and hang up the scalpel, focus a little bit more on men's health, get out of the insurance model, which is a big headache, and, you know, maybe have a better lifestyle at the same time, that I can help some of these men who are having a hard time finding good care out there.
Yeah. So what was the biggest change you found serving in your own practice, the specific sexual health needs, you know, serving your patients, that was the biggest change from working in a hospital? Aside from the fact that you're not actually doing surgery anymore, but actually working with patients on that level, what did you find there?
You know, I found that you definitely get close with these guys. You're talking about important, intimate issues that they don't share with many people, even physicians, like their primary care docs. So it takes a lot of time to delve into that stuff and get patients comfortable with the relationship, really open up and talk about some of these issues. And when I was in an insurance-based hospital model, you know, I had 5-10 minutes to see a patient. It's really hard to talk about sexual problems, you know, in that kind of a time frame and make somebody comfortable and address those types of issues. So it's a lot more talking. It's a lot more developing a relationship and a rapport with men. And I enjoy that. Instead of just running in and out of rooms and saying, hey, I'll see you in the operating room in a week. It's different, but it's fulfilling. And you develop a really good relationship with them. And what I've found is that just something you mentioned about general health and sexual health is important, because a man's sexual health is a window looking into their general health. And if they're having sexual health issues, erectile dysfunction, whatever, very likely their general health is in jeopardy. And having more time to spend with patients and having that relationship has allowed me to sort of expand my scope of care, where it's not just about me giving someone a Viagra prescription to help them get a good erection and improve their sex life. Yes, that's important. That's why people come to me. But I can also take the time to say, you know what, we need to have a talk about some of these other health factors and risk factors that I may uncover during my evaluation that might keep them alive. And my former chairman and mentor, Dr. Carson, you know, he always used to say to all of us residents, when we would see sexual dysfunction in his clinic, your patients can't have sex in the graveyard. So you better pay attention to the rest of their health issues when they come to see you for erectile dysfunction and other sexual issues, because there's probably something going on there. And I enjoyed that. I mean, I'm not a cardiologist or an internist or a sleep medicine specialist, but now I can have that conversation with these guys and uncover some of these issues that maybe they weren't addressing, or maybe their primary care doctor wasn't really aggressive at addressing, and point them in the right direction and say, hey, look, I want you seen by cardiology to have an ischemic workup. I want you seen by sleep medicine because you need sleep to be healthy. And it really helps me, I think, just take better care of not only their sexual health, but help promote better health in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask you some questions here, because I told them, I said, it was a men's sexual specialist, a doctor who just does this. And I'm like, all right. And they're not going to give their names, but here we go.
I'll do my best.
Okay. So this is from a man in his mid-20s. And he says that he's been using Viagra ED medicine since he was in his late teens, and now finds himself needing it whenever he has any sort of intercourse. Is that dangerous? Do you think that, is there a way he could perhaps not use it? Because he finds now that he's become reliant upon that for any performing anything sexual.
Yeah. So what I would say to a young guy like that, who's been experiencing ED issues at such a young age, is it's most likely not a physical problem. It can be, and he should still have a urologic workup. But you can actually be born with congenital diseases of the blood vessels in the penis and things like that, where you can have lifelong erectile dysfunction, where the patient's never had a normal erection. Now, that stuff is rare and it's hard to diagnose. Usually you have to be at an academic center like Johns Hopkins, where they have some pretty advanced vascular testing and things that they can do to find these rare cases of erectile dysfunction in young, healthy men. So it's possible that it's physical. He deserves a workup, but very often it's more psychological. It's more related to one's views on sex and someone's psychological sexual development at a young age. And I wouldn't be prescribing such a young person Viagra, because I would be looking for either a physical problem, which is rare, or I'd want him talking to a psychologist or a therapist to try and figure out, why is this young guy struggling with this issue at such a young age? Now, you don't really build up a physical dependence to Viagra, to get to your specific question. It's not like narcotics, where we build up a tolerance to these drugs and you have to keep taking more and more and more and you become reliant on them to feel normal, or if you stop, you go through kind of a withdrawal. It's not like that with these drugs, but you can develop a psychological dependence. So if there's already perhaps some psychosocial issues around his sexual performance that's affecting his sexual performance, now, because he's been using Viagra his whole life, his whole sexual life probably, can develop somewhat of a psychological dependence to it. So my advice to a young guy like that is, hey, get a real legit evaluation to make sure you don't have an organic physical problem, which is rare, but it can happen. And then you got to address the underlying etiology. He shouldn't be relying on Viagra for the rest of his life. It's not that it's a terrible thing if he needs it, but there's probably something that can be done if he finds a good psychologist, therapist to help him work through some of those psychosocial relationship type issues that can affect our performance as men.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of advertising these days around different ways of curing erectile dysfunction. I see it on TV all the time, and they almost make it seem as though it's something that you need, right? So that's great advice. And I don't think you ever want to be in need of anything when it comes to your sexual performance or really anything else. Okay. So another question. Sometimes I have pain in my testes and it's a flash of pain, but is this something I should be concerned about? And this is from, he is 33 years old. So pain in the testes, and it's a flash of pain. I don't know exactly what that means, but maybe the good doctor could clarify that a bit.
Yeah. So scrotalgia, scrotal pain, or calgia, testicular pain. I mean, that is a very vast subject, and there can be a lot of causes for continuous or intermittent pain in that, in the genitalia area. It's usually a benign condition. And if it's a rare kind of, hey, once in a while, I feel a shooting pain or a flash of pain in my scrotum, it's probably nothing. If it's happening on a regular basis, and your testicle is almost always uncomfortable or painful, then that raises the possibility of infections and tumors and hernias, hydrocele, and other scrotal pathology. So, I mean, anybody that's having pain in their testicle should have a good scrotal exam at the very least. You know, the nice thing about the scrotum is that because the skin is so, it's basically on the outside of our body and the skin on the scrotum is so thin, we can, a good urologist can get a really good idea of what's going on in the scrotum just by a physical exam alone, right? It's not like an abdominal exam where you could do a CAT scan and get so much more information than putting your hands on someone's belly. A scrotal exam at the very least he should have, mainly to exclude tumors. Testicular cancer is the most common cancer that men will get between the age of 15 and 35. And sometimes it presents with intermittent pain. So at the very least, a scrotal exam. And if the scrotal exam is normal and the pain is bothersome, where maybe it's happening every day or a couple times a day, then probably an ultrasound of the scrotum would be the next step. And a urologist would do that and do some more imaging of the area, looking at the groin for hernias and looking at the testicle for any sign of inflammation, infection, or tumors. And usually, if there's bothersome pain in the scrotal area, like persistent or significantly frequent pain, there's treatments available for that. There can be help. But yeah, it's, sometimes it's hard to diagnose. If someone's like, yeah, hey, doc, once a month I get this pain in my testicle. I do an exam and I'm like, well, your exam's normal. We'll do an ultrasound just to be sure and nothing shows up. And it can be a very elusive type diagnosis in some of those really intermittent, rare, quick bursts of discomfort.
Yeah. So nothing to be overly cautious about, but better safe than sorry, and definitely get it looked at if it's more consistent.
Very least a scrotal exam, because that excludes cancer and that's the only thing in the scrotum that's going to kill him.
Perfect. Good. Good advice. Last question. And this, I think this is more in your realm. So this is coming from, he is 45 years old and he's saying, I'm peeing more and more these days. And I seem to get up at least 2 to 3 times a night to pee. Is there a reason for that? Is this a health issue that I should be concerned with?
It can be. And urinary frequency, which during the day, and nocturia, which is frequent urination at night, can be a sign of both benign as well as more serious urologic issues. So that requires a workup, in my opinion, by a urologist. And the way that we would go about that is, the first thing we have to do is we have to figure out, is the patient producing too much urine, or is he producing a normal amount of urine and just going more often than he should? Because if someone's producing too much urine, that can be a sign of serious diseases like diabetes, where you're spilling sugar into the urine, so you pull more water and you have to urinate more often. There can also be diseases where your kidney is not concentrating the urine, and those can be serious. So if you're producing too much urine, which we call polyuria, we can figure that out by just doing a voiding diary. So if someone comes to me with urinary frequency, I start by saying, hey, I need to know how much you're drinking and how much you're urinating in a 24-hour period. So I first assess, hey, if this guy's making too much urine, then that sends me down the one road where I'm looking for diseases where the kidney is producing more urine than it should, diabetes or concentrating problems, things like that. So those are more medical diseases that can affect the kidney. Now, if they're producing a normal amount of urine, that takes us down a different road. So they're producing a normal amount of urine, let's say 2 liters a day, but they're going to the bathroom 15 times a day and 3 times a night, which is too frequent. That can be caused by a multitude of urologic diseases. There can be an obstruction to the urine tract, right? You can have prostate enlargement or a stricture or scar tissue in the urethra, which impairs the bladder from emptying. So if the bladder can't empty all the way, guess what? You're going to have to go to the bathroom more frequently. So you think about obstructive issues, right? And you know that we can do x-ray tests to figure that out. We can do physical exams. We can put a scope in the bladder, something called cystoscopy, to see if there's an obstruction to the urinary tract. Other possibilities is that something's irritating the bladder, right? So, you know, lots of things could do that. You could have a tumor in your bladder cancer. You could have a stone in your bladder. There could be something outside of your bladder that's irritating the bladder. You could have a pelvic mass. You could be constipated and the rectum is full of stool and that could be pushing on the bladder and irritating. So there's a lot of things, you know, both physical irritation outside the bladder or the bladder itself with bladder cancers. There can even be neurologic diseases that affect the bladder, where the bladder is what we call hyperreflexive or overactive, where it just makes you urinate all the time because the nerves that are innervating the bladder are not normal. They're being hyperstimulated for some reason. And we can do neurophysiologic tests on the bladder. It's something called urodynamics to understand these types of issues in men. So someone saying, hey, I got more frequency when I urinate, it could be something as simple as he's drinking too much, he's having too much caffeine, or maybe he's just getting some normal prostate growth as he's getting older. But it should be evaluated for all of those reasons, because it could be a serious metabolic disease affecting urine production, or he could have a bladder cancer, an obstruction, or some type of a neurologic disease to the bladder. So that a good urologist that specializes in voiding dysfunction and urinary symptoms is the person to see for that.
Mm, yeah, just don't assume that age is responsible for everything, right? Especially when you get into your 40s. But really, what I'm hearing here is it really isn't, it may not have anything to do with age. So if you find something that's off, always good to go see a specialist and have them diagnose it for you.
Yeah, you know, I can't tell you how many times I would see patients who went to a primary care doctor or an urgent care because they had a lot of urinary frequency and urgency, when they said, well, you're probably drinking too much caffeine. Then somehow they make their way to me and I test their urine in the office and I see blood in their urine. Then the next thing I know, I'm looking in their bladder because of the blood and the symptoms they're having, and there's a big bladder tumor. So yeah, I mean, urinary frequency sounds really benign, and very likely it could be something simple like caffeine intake or some normal benign prostate enlargement, which happens to all of us as we get older as men. But we can't assume that, and we never should. There's testing at the very basic level that we should do on anybody that comes into the office with urinary complaints. Even if it's as simple as a physical exam, checking the prostate, doing a PSA blood test to make sure it's not prostate cancer causing the frequency, checking their urine to make sure there's no blood, because if there's blood, the first thing you got to rule out is cancer. And then you can get into more of those sophisticated tests. But at the very least, you got to look at a few things to make sure that your suspicion for serious disease is low before you just tell somebody, drink less coffee.
Mm. That is great advice. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And I'm sure that's appreciated. I'm sure everyone, once they hear this, they're going to feel relieved and or they're going to want to speak to a specialist. So I have another question for you, because doing some research, I saw that you also work in law enforcement as a secondary career. That is very interesting. So tell me how that came about, and are you fighting crime on the weekends? Is that what's happening here?
So yeah, no, it's an interesting combination, especially when I do a traffic stop on a patient. You know, that can always get really funny and interesting. But about 10 years ago, I made the decision to get into law enforcement. My father was a police officer, so I always had interest in it. I always thought it was a noble profession and thought it was a great way to kind of serve your community. Yeah, it's had some funny moments when I've stopped some speeders, you know, and they're looking at me and I'm like, yeah, I'm your doctor. That's correct. I'm your urologist pulling you over. You know, slow down. Have a nice day. I'll see you at the office. And they're like stunned. They're like, what is this guy doing out here? So yeah, there could probably be some funny skits that we could do based on the merging of those two careers locally.
I would say that you may be one of the only physicians that was also working as a full-time police officer. And if there is a group like that, I think you guys should get together and share some stories because you have some really unique experiences, I'm sure. And you know, one thing about this is that, and I actually had an interview a few weeks ago with someone who was a touring musician who's now a psychiatrist, who went to medical school after touring for like 32 years, a lead guitarist. He played with Smashing Pumpkins. And then he said, you know what, I'm going to go to medical school. And now he's an active psychologist. So it's, wow, it's interesting. And yeah, so really what you just described to me is that there really isn't any boundaries. There's limitless possibilities for whatever you want to do. Someone may think, well, my career as a physician is taking up a lot of bandwidth in my life. And even though I want to be a police officer, I can't do that. And you prove that, no, that's not the case. If you want to take on being a police officer because you felt that the military career is something that you always wanted to do and serving the community and bringing a different image to police officers is something that was really driving you in your heart, and you did it. And that's pretty inspiring. And when people are in certain careers, there's always another avenue that you can have it all. It doesn't have to be this or that. You can have this and that. And you prove that by doing that. So yeah, that is awesome. So what projects are you working on now? Anything coming up in the future that you're excited about, health-wise, vacation-wise? Another career, no, maybe?
No more careers. No more careers. This is it. The business at Obsidian is going well. We're building a good cadre of staff so we can kind of get a little bit busier down there. I've been fortunate, you know, I don't have to work too hard at this point in my career, which is nice. And I can do some of these other things, other hobbies and professions, but we want to get busier down there and help more men if we can. So I think that's going to happen. Practice is going to grow this year, especially I think COVID slowing down and hopefully things open up a little bit if people can afford to drive to the office, that is. But no crazy vacations. I'm turning 50 this year, so we're going to do something. We haven't decided yet. My wife turns 50 as well, so we're going to take a big trip and do it in style for our 50th. But project-wise, I have a gentleman who I met through my brother-in-law who started a company called FirmTech. And I've invested quite a bit in this company, and I'm on the board of directors and whatnot. And so it's about the product that is about to hit the market. It's the first smart penis ring to market. So yeah, this is going to be like all the fitness trackers that we wear, like the Aura rings and the Whoop on the Fitbits. This is like a Fitbit for the penis, and it can actually track your erectile function and your sexual performance and give you data just like these products do on your phone. It can actually give you valuable insight and data into your quality of erections and sexual performance. So I'm hoping this is going to be a really successful endeavor. I think it's a brilliant idea. It wasn't my idea, but once I heard it, I was like, dude, this is amazing. Like, who wouldn't want a Fitbit for their penis?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I would love to just have like a whole episode on talking about this technology. Wow, very interesting. So we'll have to see where that goes. And maybe at some point in the near future, I will be wearing a Fitbit on my penis. And
I should be getting some samples in the office for people to try. So I'm going to share. I'm going to save one for myself to try, but I'm going to share.
I'm looking forward to that. And that's a perfect bridge. So anyone listening to this or watching this who's interested in getting a consultation or learning more about how they can improve, optimize, or just understand more about their health, specifically their sexual health, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
I mean, most people find us online. You know, they go to our website. It's obsidianmenshealth.com. And we have a form on there you can fill out if you like what you see and there's issues on our website that we can help you with. People fill out the form And we're very responsive to inquiries, or you can just call the phone number on the website too, whatever's easier. And I have somebody there that will explain everything to them, you know, how the practice works, how the workup happens. And we're very transparent about the process. So just hit the website, obsidianmenshealth.com. That's the best way to kind of learn more about us. And you could either fill out the inquiry form online or just give us a phone call.
Perfect. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can click the link below in the bio. There is a link there to Obsidian Men's Health. And if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, you can see them live and in person. So thank you so much today, Dr. Mark. That was an excellent, excellent conversation that we just had. I'm sure I got a lot of insight out of it, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. And I'm looking forward to seeing how things progress and what other exciting and new adventures that you're up to.
Thanks for listening in to the Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at the Alchemist Lounge.